from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And I'm Mara.
And, of course, we've got Andrew running the boards behind there. We thank you, Andrew, for that. And, well, to remind you, this is a show about video games. And Ara and I come in every week. And, of course, you can go to Chatterbox Game Show to join us live right now. If you're listening live, go to chatterboxgameshow.com. And we've got a live chat room on there. Unfortunately, I don't have my computer with me today. And the shoddy computers we have here in the studio can't even run the live chat. So I'm not even on it. But normally am. And, of course, there are other listeners of the show who are in there, other chatterboxers. So here's what we're going to talk about today. We've got a lot going on. Last week, we had Cindy and her three kids in, and we talked about some interesting things regarding games and the real life of children playing games with a mother who probably wouldn't be so happy with them playing the games that they really do play and she doesn't even know about. And that was really interesting.
And GTA in particular.
Exactly. And we had, you know, there were some interesting happenings in the studio. I really enjoyed it. I had a fun time. And we had a lot of positive feedback about the show. People appreciating that we do something that's a little bit different from time to time. Not just different from our normal show, but different from other people's shows as well. And so I'm glad to hear that. And I'm certainly happy to talk a little bit more about what we found out during that show. If anyone wants to call in and talk about it, or anything else really, 866-536-1100 is the number to call. Again, that's toll-free all throughout the U.S. and I think even Canada. Now, some other things we have not gotten to in a while are all these launch numbers people are throwing out there. The PlayStation 3, there's been all sorts of news about the launch numbers and how they got cut. And I've been saying from the very beginning that they were only going to release 500,000 on launch anyway. I don't know why anyone thought we were going to get more. Maybe they said because we were going to get 2 million. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter. We're only getting 500,000. And then it turns out, well, 500,000 for the whole world, and we're getting 400 of those. So it's pretty much the same thing. Essentially just means Xbox 360 all over again, but slightly worse because we're only getting 80%.
Yeah, is it just me, or, I mean, I don't know, maybe my memory's failing me or something, but, I mean, this kind of thing, like, more or less just seems to happen almost every time a new console comes out lately, doesn't it?
Yep. Well, every time.
Well, there you go.
It's not just now. Same thing happened with the PlayStation. Same thing happened with the Dreamcast.
It's interesting that, I mean, are the hardware manufacturers just really seriously that bad at estimating the amount of product that they're going to have available? Or is this, you know, is there perhaps something either like more sinister or more deliberate going on here?
Well, I don't think it's deliberate, because really they're screwing themselves by not having enough at launch, because they're giving Microsoft an entire year and a Christmas season that they don't have. And they certainly, I think, really did intend on getting enough out there. But the problem is that they say we're going to have it released by a certain time, and they're working with hardware they've never worked with before, and then inevitably can't produce it on time. It's like, all right, if you need to get it out by Christmas 2007, maybe you should have it ready by like a little after Christmas 2006. Maybe you shouldn't say you're going to have it released in a certain amount of time.
Right.
But they're, you know, they're forced because they're nipping at Microsoft's heels. Now, more interestingly than the stuff nobody cares about regarding Sony PlayStation stuff, the Wii launch numbers have come out recently. I'm sure you were following the news, Ara. And
sort of.
Yeah, they didn't really talk about numbers, but I don't think anyone's terribly worried about getting one, if they really want one anyway.
Yeah.
The GameCube, not the GameCube, the Wii, the follow-up to the GameCube, coming out November 19th, was officially announced for 250 bones. Now, that's what surprised me, because I've been telling everybody that you're going to see it released for $200, because the Nintendo was $200. The Super Nintendo was $200. The Nintendo 64 was $200. The GameCube was $200. They sort of set a trend, you might say.
That's true. But then, I mean, like, when you're competing against, what, $500 console? I mean, $250, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's pretty much the same. Here's $250.
But you'll notice they're throwing in a game this time, which they haven't done in quite a long time. So it's sort of like releasing the $200 version with Wii Sports, which they could sell for $50 anytime. And that's actually what they're doing in Japan. They're selling it for the equivalent of just a little bit over $200, but it's not coming with Wii Sports.
Actually, you know what I find interesting with, you know, like the game console releases over the past few years? It's like before, I mean, I'm talking about like 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. All that stuff would come out in Japan first.
Yeah.
And now it's more like it's coming out here first, you know?
It actually is coming out here first.
And it's like, you know, something, I mean, like when I was a kid, I mean, we'd be like, oh, you know, Super Mario, like 95's in Japan and it's already out there. And,
it's only 93 and they've got version 95 out there.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not talking about the year 95, I mean like the 95th version, because that's how we'd make up lies when we were kids. But yeah, like that's not really, that cultural thing's not really around anymore.
No, you're right. We were like, I wish I could move to Japan. I'd get all the games so early, it'd be fantastic.
Now the Japanese kids are fantasizing the same way about us.
Yeah, and it's neat, sort of, except we're stuck with the testbed scenario that we never really realized happened over there. But now it's hitting us too, right? We didn't realize, oh, too bad you get a bunch of crappy hardware that breaks when you buy the first launch version. Oops. And that's why I just refuse to buy that stuff. Nintendo has a pretty good track record, so I'm happy to buy their system at launch.
This is true.
Hell, I'm almost happy to buy two of them. What sucks is, like, with the Wii, you're going to be forced to, really, you got to buy four controllers. You probably don't need four nunchuck controllers, but you probably need four controllers, and that's going to run you $40 a pop. So that kind of sucks. But I figure I'll buy one extra one, and somebody else I know, if I ever have a party, I'll probably have someone else who has one.
Well, you don't need four. I mean, you know.
If you want to really enjoy it, you're probably going to want four. But anyway, it's interesting that they didn't stick to their $200 price point, but they're throwing a game in there. So it's sort of like the same thing. So I'm happy to say I was only half wrong.
You know what I think Sony should do now that like they can only make so few consoles? They should just be like, okay, you know what? This console, we're just going to jack up the price. Cause
they should,
you know,
just sell it on eBay.
Those eBayers, that's even better. Just eBay-only release, you know, $1,200. I'm sure they can sell at least half of their product.
I think Sony should do it. All of them starting at a penny. All eBay release.
Yeah, all you guys who love just like paying way too much for no reason just to get something a month early, you guys are happy. Sony's happy. Everyone's happy.
Yeah. And you know what? Then all the people who want it on eBay would resell it afterwards on eBay again for more money. Because it'd be like some moratorium on selling them again. So they'd buy them on eBay for $2,000 and then sell them on eBay for $3,000. That's exactly what would happen. But
fantastic. I want to see just absolute chaos when this stuff happens.
But I mean, I was thinking about this too, and we keep bitching about the numbers, the cost of the system, but really think about it where the $400 Xbox 360, when you add the $200 high definition disk drive, right? Then you're up to $600. Then you add the Wi-Fi adapter, you're up to $700. And you're paying $700 for essentially the same thing that the PS3 is giving you.
What's this on the 360?
Yeah. You get, because
wow, I've been out of the news. What's all this about?
Oh, and you don't get, all right, so the PS3 comes with a hard drive. The good version comes with a 60-gig hard drive, not a 20-gig hard drive.
Right.
It comes with Wi-Fi built in.
Right.
Costs $100 to add Wi-Fi to the Xbox 360 if you want the official Wi-Fi adapter. And also the HD DVD drive is probably going to be about $200.
Right? Wait, we're talking about PS3 here, right?
No, I'm talking about Xbox 360 versus PS3.
Okay.
Right, so if you take video game system, next generation optical, you know, movie playing drive,
okay,
and wireless built in, plus the fact that it's got a bigger disk drive and memory card ports, and costs $100 less than the equivalent with the Xbox 360. Really, it's the cheaper version. It's just that we have to buy it all at once, and so that $600 price tag is giving us sticker shock. And not only that, if the system breaks, you're paying, you know how we buy those warranties from the shops that sell them for...
Some of us do, yes.
Yeah. So I really don't normally buy them, but on a first generation system like a Sony or Xbox, I definitely tell people you should get the warranty from GameStop and EB Games and whoever sells it to you, because it's guaranteed to break. It's, you're really saving yourself money by buying it. But the thing is, they're based on the price of the console. So a $300 console is a $30, warranty thing.
Yeah.
And so if you buy a $600 PS3, it's going to be like a $50 or $60 or $70 warranty. It might even be more than that. It might be like $100. I don't know how crazy they're going to get. But the warranty is going to be more because they got to, replace the entire thing. So that's sort of a downside. But nobody's going to think about that. So even if you take the $300 Xbox 360, you add the hard drive for $100, so you get the 20-gig hard drive that the PS3 comes with the cheaper version.
Right.
You don't get the Wi-Fi because it's not built into the PS3, the cheaper version. But you do add the HD disk drive. You're still up to $600. So either way, you're paying $100 more for the equivalent Xbox 360 version, if you want the HD drive. If you don't want the HD drive, then it's a little bit cheaper. It's just that with Sony, they're forcing the Blu-ray down your throat. Anyway, I just think it's an interesting way to look at it. Because, you know, half the people who are whining about the price are going to buy the new disc drive anyway. Right? So that's just my take on it. Now, it's another thing I noticed. I don't know if you found this week, but Seaman 2 is getting released.
Wow, no, this is news to me.
Yeah, Seaman 2, which is actually not Seaman. It's Neanderthals, or Neanderthals, I guess is the official pronunciation. So, like, little humanoids, but it's, like, the official sequel or whatever. It's coming out for PlayStation 2 next year.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yes, very intense. I'm all excited about it.
But it wasn't, like, Sea Woman or something.
Oh, that would have been interesting, too. I bet there's going to be some. Because there's got to be mating involved. Come on. The original Seaman had reproduction, just in a weird way.
Yeah.
Anyway, I bet half the people listening don't even know what that game is. But, you know, email me and I'll explain it to you. We'll be back after the break with a whole bunch of stuff. And Ara has a whole jazzy thing he wants to talk about. I'm kind of excited to let him take the reins.
We'll be back. Welcome back, guys. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Ara, and that's Alon right next to me.
Hi, everybody!
And we've got Andrew back in the Engineer's Dungeon over there. And if you want to call in, you can dial 1-866-536-1100. It's toll-free. Give us a call. Talk to us. And also, before we really get into it, we got to mention UAT.
Of course.
Where Alon went to school.
I did.
And you learned, like, all kinds of crazy stuff there, didn't you?
I learned how to use Macs, I learned how to model, and I learned how to texture stuff. It was crazy, jazzy stuff. That's the University of Advancing Technology.
Anyway, right on.
Now let's talk.
All right, so what I wanted to talk about today, this segment, was that story-driven versus gameplay-driven games. And just so we know what we're talking about here... You know, let's define what the difference is about.
Are you basically saying, like, action game versus role-playing game?
Pretty much. I mean, like, with story-driven games, I'm talking about, like, you know, you can also call them narrative-driven games. You know, these are games where, you know, they're basically modeled around, you know, a complete and specific story, right? I mean, the story is the most important part of the game here. You know, a lot of RPGs, you know, games like, you know, Xenosaga, Silent Hill, Final Fantasies, you know, a lot of movie-based games. These are story-driven games. On the other hand, what I'm calling, you know, gameplay-driven games are basically games like Guitar Hero, Ikaruga, WarioWare, Tetris, Contra.
Games that I like.
Games that I like, too, incidentally. All right. You know, these types of games, basically, you know, there's a particular gameplay mechanic or set of mechanics that are the primary focus, right? And if there is a story, it's just kind of like part of the wrapper around it. Now, you know, this doesn't mean a story-driven game can't have gameplay in it. I mean, for it to be a game, you've got to have gameplay anyway, right? And it doesn't mean a gameplay-based game can't have a story in it. The difference that I'm talking about here is basically just where the emphasis is. The thing I find interesting is that, you know, philosophically speaking, you know, these are two very, very different approaches to making a game. And, you know, they can result in very different types of game experiences. And a question that I'd like to pose to you, Alon, and to all the listeners out there is, you know, have you ever felt like the story sequences ever get in the way of playing a game when, you know, when you're playing like one of those RPGs, one of those games with all those cutscenes? And the second part to this question is, you know, when you're ever playing something like, you know, a more gameplay based game, actually, no.
You want to backtrack a second?
Let's back up there.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, do you ever feel like, you know, game sequences in the same type of game get in the way of enjoying the story?
Well, I can answer the first part, right? I think a very classic example of story getting in the way of gameplay is Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, everybody moaned about that game. With the, what do they have, like 2 or 3 hours of...
There's a lot
of cutscenage.
And a lot
game.
Of it at the beginning, too, and not that much game playing.
Yeah, that was weird. I think it was heavier towards the end. In fact, it was definitely heavier towards the end.
You know, maybe it was like heavy in the beginning and the end.
Perhaps. Or just heavy all around. But it was, it certainly got in the way. But still, I think a lot of people who were watching that game got into it, but they just, there was a lot of negativity about that game, even though it was incredible.
Right.
But gameplay getting in the way of story, I don't complain about that because I don't play games that are thick with story because that's just not my motivation for playing a game.
Right.
So I'll watch movies for stories.
Maybe one of you guys listening out there, you know, maybe you've been playing a game or there's a game that you really love to play and, you know, you're in it for the story, right? So you find that, like, maybe some of these game sequences are kind of like an annoyance to you. You know, you just want to find out what happens next, and maybe you don't even get to see the whole story because you're not good enough to pass a certain point in the game. If you want to call in, you know, our number is 866-536-1100.
We keep saying that, but the truth is, our listeners are, they don't listen live.
I think they're busy playing games.
But we could talk about it next week, too. So you can always email us, right? Anything at chatterboxgameshow.com will get to us. So send it off.
Right on.
One of these days, I'll even put Ara on the homepage. So you can email him, too. But Ara at chatterboxgameshow.com will get directly to Ara. So not a problem there if you want to discuss this. And then we can relive it next week. But I see your point.
Yeah. You know what's interesting that you brought up, you know, with Metal Gear Solid 2? There's another game, Xenosaga.
Yeah.
I know
by Konami, right?
It's a Namco game,
is
actually.
It? Cool. Yeah, shows my knowledge. All right.
But no, it's interesting because if you've played this game, it's like, okay, a cutscene will start and then 10-20 minutes later, and then there's a save point. And then another cutscene.
During the cutscene?
Yes. I mean, there are save points in between parts of the game where there's absolutely no interactivity. And I think this is just crazy.
Like, you know what? You've been too busy watching this movie. We know you have to go eat dinner.
Right.
Save it, and you can come back and watch the rest of the movie.
Yeah, like, let's give you a chance to save your progress in the film. I mean,
that is absurd. I've never heard of that. But one thing I was thinking about when you were saying that is kind of like, you ever buy... There's all these products out there now, like MP3 players are a good example, right? That are trying to mix a lot of different functionality. In fact, cell phones are a really great example, right?
Right.
You try to mix the PDA with the cell phone, with the calculator, with the messaging, with all the different things, right? And people who really know their stuff about the products they want generally accept that when you get a multifunction device, none of the functions are going to work very well, except perhaps the one that it was originally intended for. Which is what's great about the iPod, right? It plays MP3s, and that's essentially all it does.
Right.
Or music files. But it's not doing a radio. It's not doing a voice recorder. It's not, you know, cutting your potatoes. And I find a video game with storyline a multifunction device, one that does it poorly. The storyline, if I want to watch a story or a movie, right, I'm going to watch a movie, and I don't want to play it. That's not – I don't have motivation there. And I think that the gameplay is probably going to be subpar because they spent so much damn time – thinking about storyline, or it just gets in the way. Like you're saying, it would get in the way of the story because,
right.
I mean, really, what was the producer's intention? Were they trying to tell a story? Because if they were, they're bottlenecking your gameplay in to fit this scenario, and I just don't find that personally interesting. Other people don't seem to mind it.
That's funny that you went into that because, I mean, that was like pretty much, you know, the direction that I was going to go in.
Great minds, my friend.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting that, you know, the last thing that you said, because it seems like there's, like, this stigma in this industry a little bit that, you know, a lot of people regard games that are pretty much, like, pure gameplay games, in other words, as, like, really, like, not complete games. You know, it's almost as if, like, a lot of the people who publish games seem to think that, you know, if they don't give you a game that has an epic storyline, then you as a consumer don't think that you're getting enough value for your dollars.
But the marketplace is destroying that idea with the acceptance of Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's wrong. There's maybe this is kind of like the end of that phase, or maybe that phase is starting to end around now, because, like, there's definitely, like, before Xbox Live Arcade came out, you know, there's definitely that trend of, like, you know, we need to, I mean, you can't just give them an arcade game. You have to give them this huge, like, monolithic game with this gigantic story, and it has to be epic, and it has to be blockbuster to make any money, and all this other stuff.
Yeah, even Tekken tries to have a thick story.
There you go. I mean, we still get a little bit of that, right? I mean, I'm hoping that this is the start of the trend, that we're not going to have so much focus on that anymore.
I got to tell you, honestly, I'm glad that a game like Tekken would have that sort of storyline to sort of weave it together and give you some understanding of character background and stuff, just mm-hmm. because otherwise it feels, I don't know, just too contrived. and like here this game is just fighting.
But this is what I'm getting at. It's like, I think that a lot of other people get that feeling, and I think that maybe that's the main impetus for, you know, a lot of this introduction into what I would consider to be, you know, the ancillary aspects of a game. You know, all
even the requirement of storyline.
Yeah, basically. You know, I mean, yeah, you know what? Like, I'll concede that, like, yeah, the game does feel fuller, right, when you put in all this secondary stuff. But, you know, to me, they're secondary after all.
Okay.
And what I'd like to get into when we come back is, you know, why I think it's actually bad for the industry to get too deeply and too involved in these heavily story-driven types of games.
All right, and we'll talk about it as soon as we're back.
Me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one.
Sweet, sweet sounds of Loco Roco. Everybody, that's a new PSP game for you. If you didn't notice, it came out very recently. I recommend giving it a shot. I tried out the demo. So did Aura.
Yeah, that game's driving me crazy.
It's pretty cool.
It's fantastic.
And the music is wonderful as well. It's only like $5,000, a very expensive portable game. Now, what is it, like $40? Actually, I think they might have released this one at $30.
I don't know how much it is. I assume it's normal price.
If it's $30, I will not yell at you for buying it. If it's more than $30, you should not be buying a portable game for that much. And, you know, go spend your money on something a lot more important.
You know what I can't get tired of about that game?
Is that the hot music,
which you just heard. I mean, that was like the intro music, like the first stage music is even hotter. But like, I mean, the little Loco Rocos, these blobs with these cute faces, I mean, they're singing the frickin' song when you're playing the game. They're looking at you, and they're singing at you the whole damn time.
You know, some games, they have style. And I guess it didn't even go over well in Japan. That game got, like, shunned. People weren't buying it. It was going for pennies on the street.
This is shocking to me.
Yeah, because you think it totally is a Japanese game, right? Comes out here, and I don't suspect it's doing very well, probably because nobody plays the PSP.
I'm going to have to go buy, like, 30 copies.
Yeah, you might have to, just to induce some sort of enthusiasm over at the local Fry's. That'd be funny, because you screw up their inventory, and they buy, like, 5,000 copies for next week.
That's awesome. I'm going to do that right after the show.
We should go together. Okay, so let's continue what you were talking about. I lost my place, but I'm sure you know.
Yeah, so it's really interesting what you were, you know, getting into before the break. You know, you were saying how it's kind of like, you know, like a multifunction device, right?
You know, a game that plays has a thick storyline, you mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, you have the story and you have, you know, the game, the interactive portions. And, you know, the one thing that, like, a lot of people, one thing that you can't do, no matter how many times you split it up, really, you know, is that, you know, if you have a narrative, okay, you have to, especially if there's characters that aren't like you personally, you know, as the player, right? You have to present that in a non-interactive way. You know, just in order to tell a story that the player is not creating, right? In order to have something that you've directed as an author, right?
You're speaking from the game designer's point of view here.
Right. You have to present it in a way that's non-interactive. And games, you know, games are essentially interactive. And I think that, you know, these...
You say that.
Well,
a lot of games do a pretty good job of making themselves non-interactive.
Well, this is very true. But, you know, the point is that, you know, games that are heavily story-based dilute the medium and the power that we have as game designers. And, you know, we're sacrificing interactivity here, you know, which I think is, you know, the singular unique quality that allows games to be so special in order to present a narrative. You know, and I'm not saying that, like, you know, we shouldn't have these types of games. I mean, like, you can have all kinds of games. I mean, the game as media is, like, you can think of it as, like, a container for all other possible media. That's how powerful it is. But the one thing that makes it so special is the interactivity. And we're kind of, you know, skirting that away by focusing so much on narrative in games.
So I think, let me try to bottle this up. The point you're trying to make is that story is okay, but if it goes so far to the point that you're taking gameplay right out of the equation, it's really, you've gone too far and you stepped over a line.
Well, basically, I mean, I think that's true too, but I think what I'm getting at is, like, all right, you know, there's so much that we can explore in the medium of games that hasn't been explored, and we're not doing that when we present narrative to the player. You know, narrative is best explored in a linear media like a movie or a film. Yeah. We're basically just, we're not taking advantage of everything that we can in a game when we do these things.
I'm not trying to complain that there's story-based games.
Right, and neither am I, but I'm just saying that
God, like, knows you love them, right? You're an RPG player.
Well, you know, some, right? I mean, like, Xenogears, right? I mean, that had, like, a fantastic, ultra-cool storyline, like Chrono Trigger. I don't think I've played a game lately that I was, like, went gaga over the story about.
You've had your face buried in Disgaea for the last 2 weeks. Is that not story?
Yeah, it's actually not. I mean, I would say that that's primarily, like, a gameplay-type game because...
Yeah. See, I've never played it, so...
Yeah, it's all mechanics, that game. I mean, okay. There is a story, but, I mean, like, yeah. The cool part is all mechanics.
All right, well, the cool part. See, I just... This is my new strategy for describing games to people too. And I said this last week that you can point out to people who don't like a certain game or don't like games in general, just be like, listen, truth is you do like games. You just haven't found the one you do like. And there's games of all types in the broad spectrum that is gaming. And so I am just not into a game that is so heavy on story because, I mean, maybe I just don't have the attention span for it, but like right. A game like Geometry Wars really fulfills my gaming fantasies because it's right. You jump right in, you play it, and it's fantastic. I kind of wish it could be a little bit longer and more progressive.
Sure.
I'm not so into the real short game because I don't like that sort of repetition. And then I say, okay, well, I'm done the game in 4 minutes. Well, I could have used 20. You know, that would have been neat. But it's much closer to a raw and more enjoyable game experience than one I have to sit around over and over. Like, I'm loving Dead Rising lately. But at the same time, don't like how I essentially play the game over and over and over the same parts just because of the way the game works is you end up playing it from the beginning, literally, several times.
Yeah. Now here's something fascinating that I realized while I was thinking about this topic. You know, they tried to do interactivity in movies before. You know, I don't know if you remember.
You mean with, like, the voting system?
Yes,
in the,
yes. Yeah. Or, like, stuff like that. Okay, flopped horribly. You know? Why are we... So that is kind of like the movie analog to what they're doing with games, right?
Yeah.
Now, why do we keep doing this with games? Why is it not flopping?
I think because they're convinced that there is this beautiful thing. They didn't do it correctly with movies, so now they're trying another way.
Right. But it's also, like, economically, it's also working with games. And, you know, the couple of things that I realized was, you know, one of the problems with pure skill-based games or pure gameplay games is that, you know, because they're inherently skill-based, they're inherently more skill-based, right? So they're generally less accessible to the average public than story-heavy games. Because if you can't enjoy or play the story-based game, right, you can at least enjoy the story. In a pure skill game...
Yeah, but I disagree with you here. Because some of the most popular games in the world are casual games, and they are not very heavy with story.
Right. Well, that brings me to my another point, actually, which is that, you know, if they're designed right, then, you know... I agree with you entirely, but the thing is, interactivity is way, way harder to design than a narrative. You know, they've been making movies for about over 100 years. We just started making video games for about a third of that time. So naturally, you know, the industry at large, I mean, like, and by industry, I mean just like the whole kind of creative collective of people, we're generally better at making stories than we are at making interactive games, video games, because we've just been doing it for three times longer, you know? So there are, I mean, there are some really, really awesomely designed skill-based games, and those are highly accessible. But, I mean, if you take everything at face value, right? I mean, you know, generally speaking, right, it's a lot harder to do something that plays right than something that looks right or you know, tells a story right.
I want to know one of the examples you're talking about, though. You say that they've been, these very story-driven games have been successful economically as well. Give me an example of what you're talking about, so I get a better feel for what you're saying, because I'm still a little bit ambiguous.
Well, by economically successful, I mean that, like, you know, they're still making them, right?
What I mean is, give me a specific gaming example.
Well,
come on.
No. Well, I mean, the point isn't a specific one. I mean, like, I can name a whole bunch of games, right? I mean, like, the Final Fantasies are still coming out. You know, they're still making, you know...
They, by the way, are totally going downhill.
Right, but they're making money off them. I mean, they gotta be, right? They're still making them.
Yeah, 3 or 4, 10 of them at a time.
I mean, like, you know, the Grand Theft Auto games, I mean, those are very, very story-based, you know? I mean, yes, there's a lot of gameplay in them, but, like, you know... there's a story arc in the game.
Yeah, but you can't say they're so heavy that they detract from the gameplay.
I mean, you know, that's one of those, like, kind of in the middle types of games, I think. But, you know, there's, what was that other game? Like, Advent Rising, was it? I'm not saying that these are, like, big hits, but what I'm saying is that the economy of these games is sufficient to sustain more and more of these types of games to be made over time, which they are doing.
Yeah, but I also think if you look over the course of what's been successful, generally speaking, you won't really find a lot of those. Like, the Final Fantasies are exception.
Right.
And it's interesting, because they have a lot of gameplay in them, too. Like, I suspect Xenogears is one of those examples that's very, very heavy on storyline. But the best examples of those, really, are the full motion video games that flopped miserably 10 years ago.
Or I guess worse, depending on what your perspective is. But yeah. I mean,
yeah, like, I mean, those were really interactive stories. Right. And they were poorly done. So
too heavy on the story, really.
Yeah, and right. So this seems to me like the example of what you're describing, and in which case, they pretty much failed. And so the ones that are successful have that medium ground, or Grand Theft Auto, you know, lots of gameplay, where you could completely avoid the story if you wanted. Of course, it's an option.
Right.
You could also go the story way. Final Fantasies are heavy on story, but they also have plenty of gameplay involved where you can play for hours without really seeing a whole lot of story action, especially with all the different side missions they have. Anyway, we're going to come back.
Lots of grinding.
Yeah, if people want to call and talk about this, we can continue talking, or we'll wait for your emails and talk about it next week. We'll be back with more stuff after this.
Welcome back. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara. We've got Alon over there.
That's me. I'm reading our forums at chatterboxgameshow.com.
And as usual, there's engineer Andrew in the back.
Who hides like a little weasel.
And I haven't heard any sound effects at all this show.
None today, but I'm sure he's going to come in with a plane crashing. Oh, he said it, so he's going to have to pick a different sound effect. Isn't that right, Andrew? Oh, and now none at all because we...
Oh, we're getting the cold shoulder. Oh, we're not. Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, there it is. All right, so we talked about all that other stuff. If you guys want to discuss it, email us, ara@chatterboxgameshow or alon@chatterboxgameshow and .com. And we can relive it next week if there's any interesting commentary from you emailers out there, you chatterboxers. There were some other things I wanted to bring up, too. And really, we might want to devote more time to this next week. But there was an article that I read since last week's show, or at least really more of a concept that was brought up. The article was not very well developed, in my opinion, at least not what I found on the internet. It was titled The Death of Childhood, and it discusses really the fact that all the media that we're exposed to, and video games are one example, is sort of killing our children's growth. And I don't know how proven this is, or, you know, how many examples the author has of this, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about. There are a lot of people who, for instance, listen to this show or just live life out there who are our age, right? R and I, late 20s.
Yeah.
And a lot of people our age already have a kid or multiple kids, and some of them are kids who are old enough to be playing games and already are, you know, sitting in the banana lounge chair playing games with dad, and dad loves the idea of his kid playing games, right? But, you know, he's not outside pushing the little circle on the stick thing. Nobody knows what I'm talking about, but like
I sure don't.
I picture, you know, like the circular wheel thing, and you push it forward with a stick, like in the movies with Amish kids playing with the little
wooden
toys.
I never understood what the hell is going on with that thing.
Yeah, pushing a wheel.
What?
But like, if this happens, we haven't really seen kids grow up, I think, this way yet. But I imagine there are going to be several that do, where they're presented pretty much with just new age medium, where you've got iPods and video games and television and computers and everything you can do on computers, right? All these things that are basically babysitters for the two working parent household. And you've got just new technologies driving these children's growth. Then, you know, what's going to happen when they get older? They're deprived of a lot of the physical connections that are required for you know, the development of people as we've come used to. You know, maybe this will be new. Maybe they'll be enhanced human beings because it's something new. I don't know. But I suspect these kids will be at a loss. These new adults, by the time they become adults, will be at a loss because they haven't had a lot of the what are presumed mandatory interactions to develop properly. And thank you. I know that I think that I don't really know, but I bet there's something to this, to the idea that your kid's going to grow up and, oh, look at that. Johnny doesn't know how to talk to girls, which is like what Ara was saying during the break when I brought it up to him. He was like, yeah, we're not going to know how to talk to girls. We're not going to know how to walk, you know, is sitting in a chair all day watching a video screen. There's going to be, imagine the cognitive development that disappears when you're looking at a 2D screen all day instead of actually playing with building blocks, right?
Yeah, it's one of them's probably going to be like binocular vision.
Yeah, you know, and I was suggesting that like if 20 years ago someone's grew up just playing video games, like I'm picturing King's Quest, the original King's Quest, my entire interaction with the person would be like, talk to you, get, you know, shoes, lift skirt, grab girl. Like my interaction would be very stoic and lacking any form of human behavior. And so I'm sort of curious what people think about this. I don't know if I want to talk about it at length today, because I want to hear what people's thoughts are first. So give me an email, Alana at Chatterbox Game Show or Ara at Chatterbox Game Show, and I want to hear what you have to say about it. And if you have any examples, perhaps, of young kids that you're already seeing develop this way. And I know for a fact that we have at least one listener, and several listeners have emailed me and discussed how they have children who are playing games now. And I'm curious, you know, do you think you spend too much time on it? Or with your letting your kids play games? And this is something that Cindy got into last week.
Yeah, you know what? I was shocked that the kids, and I don't know, maybe I'm not remembering my childhood well enough, but the kids seemed to basically have, like, want to play as much. I mean, like, they were allotted, what, like 4 hours?
Yeah, and
games or general media or whatever. And they seemed to have the attitude of, like, that they would have spent 24 hours a day, or at least their waking hours, just playing games if they were allowed to.
Yeah, and I don't think that's completely true. We were also looking, though, like, we didn't let it soak into our heads while we were talking to them, interviewing them last week, as much as we should have. The fact that the 4 hours was during the summer months.
That's a good point.
And during school. I think the allotment of 4 hours is still there, but they probably never even hit it because they're too busy doing homework and whatever. And they had said that. But, I mean, imagine your day goes by. You wake up in the morning, all the way until you go to bed. You have no, you know, planned events, right? You're not going to go to school. You're not going to go to camp. 4 hours of electronic media. That's really not that much. Like, I would probably spend a lot of time watching TV and whatever on a day. Because there are days, you know, you don't see a friend or you don't go out bike riding or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've got that limitation. Oh, crap. What do you do? Oh, you've got to actually read a book.
Just watching TV could be just as bad. I don't know. I mean, I think that actually, like, restricting exposure to just like regular human social interactions is just as bad too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know just like speaking about myself and my own childhood, I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, you know, I was the nerd kid, you know, who was, you know, introverted and, you know, yeah, you know what? Like, I spent way too much time, like, you know, just like playing on the computer, playing video games, doing all this stuff. And you know what? Like, yeah, you know, I came out a little differently. You know, there's some things that I'm way better at that, you know, a lot of people who didn't, you know, spend all this time with electronic media have. You know, there's some things that, like, I'm a lot worse at. There's a whole bunch of things that I learned, you know, way later on in life than most people because of all this.
Yeah, I think we overthink it too. Like, as adults, when I have a kid, and really, let's hope that I don't. But one day if I do, like, I'm going to have to plan like a daily planner. Like, all right, my kid's going to get half an hour of time reading a book. He's going to get half an hour of time playing video games, half an hour watching bland television and movies. And, you know, another half hour playing an instrument, and another half hour running track, and another half hour talking to kids and partying, and another half hour getting into fight. Cause that's really important. You got to get into some fights when you're a kid.
I got into plenty of those though. There's no shortage of fights.
Yeah, tell me about it. Me too. And so... I mean, we're going to have to, like, we want to make sure that the kid is well-rounded and he does all these things. I even saw, I was listening to something on the news this morning on the Today Show or whatever, that, like, I think more valedictorians than ever were not permitted into colleges. Like, we're denied admissions because they're looking for well-rounded students or something. So, I mean, it sort of goes this way, too, where Cindy is making sure her kids don't get too much in any one direction. But right. Really, we didn't ask her, well, do you limit the amount of time they could be reading books? Like, I assuming that they don't have that problem because she didn't bring it up. But, I mean, there are parents out there. They have kids. You know, you hear about the bookworm kid, the girl or boy who wants to read books, and they go to the library and they read for like 12 hours a day, and the parents don't care because it's accepted as, you know, something that's positive for the children.
Right. It is positive, but it's always a trade-off. I mean,
yeah, no,
you're losing something there too. And, you know, that's that thing that you're losing has its own value, you know. Who's to say what's better, you know?
Well, exactly. And we've said time and time again that anything outside of moderation is going to be a problem. And so when you do 12 hours of reading a book, well, you're missing out on the social interaction. And when the time comes, you're not going to be able to make friends and meet people. And, I mean, that leads to all sorts of life deficiencies.
Right. Unless you're breeding a chess champion, and then you're probably kind of crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean, you've seen childhood stars are screwy. Childhood sports... Stars are screwy.
It's all messed up.
Yeah, because they spend too much time doing one particular thing. Of course, sometimes they're the ones, well, often they're the ones who make the millions of dollars. But still, they also end up in coke clinics rehabbing for 5 years. So, hi, Lindsay. Anyway, there's so much stuff to talk about. I wanted to mention the fact that Bully was going to be a teen-rated game.
Oh, yeah, we can talk about that.
You didn't think that was a big deal, but a lot of people do because of the game politics that's going around these days. Anyway, we're at the end of the show, everybody. Thank you very much, Ara.
Thank you a
lot. For the show. And thank you, everybody, for listening. As I said before, chatterboxgameshow.com. You can email us. You can go there for live chat. And you can go on our forums, even though we've got crazy spam we're trying to deal with. Also, go to GameTap and get GameTap free trial so that you can get Sam and Max 2 before anybody else. I might even put a trial up on the website so we can make some bling off of that. We'll be back next week, everybody.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.